and the Spirit is yielded and poured out for the will of the Father and the Son. And the Father, by his nature, he gathers up the Godhead in one wonderful, loving unity. And that's the everlasting covenant. So if you think about it, you could imagine the everlasting covenant as being a divine embrace. It's the divine family. It's this wonderful unity and union of the Godhead, three in one. They are completely united. One is the mark of that unity. It's this oneness, their unity in love, in purpose and holiness. They are one. And then when we consider the new covenant, what we see is here is mankind created to be made part of that covenant. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that when God created the human race, his plan was from the beginning that they would partake of the everlasting covenant. But there's also no doubt in my mind that when the human race was created, it was not created fully partaking of the everlasting covenant. Why? Well, we could think about it a bit. We don't know that much about it. But I think it's because to enter the everlasting covenant, you have to sacrifice. You cannot enter it without laying down your will. So you cannot, in one sense, be made part of it except you agree to it. It's something you have to give yourself to. I've no doubt Adam and Eve would have been introduced to it step by step as they said no to themselves, as they obeyed God, and as they kept the covenant of the garden by faith, trusting God's nature, they would eventually have partaken of the everlasting covenant, but they didn't. So now he's the human race not just not part of that covenant, that everlasting covenant, but now is the human race in their first acts, they are pushed further away from that everlasting covenant. And not just further away, they become enemies of God. They become enemies of the covenant. So not only are they not part of this divine unity, they become enemies of it, foreign to it, hostile to it. And now God is making the other covenants we've seen to try and bring man back to the steps by which man may be made part of the everlasting covenant. So underneath all God's dealings with the human race is the plan, and I call it the plan, capital T, capital P, the plan to bring man back to the everlasting covenant. So let's just pause for a moment there too and think that here's man now further and further away, and there's God in this divine embrace of perfect love. And how will God bring man into it? Well, one way we could look at it is to see that when God looks at us, he opens the covenant, the three persons cease from their embrace, and they turn to us, and they call us to partake of that divine embrace. The only problem is that in order for that to take place, not only must the embrace, if you like, open for us to take part, but there is actually a tearing of the embrace. There's an actual tearing in the Godhead. One of the mysteries of the cross is what happened in the Godhead. But when we say that Christ died, we don't just mean physically. In fact, the physical death of Jesus was a tremendous part of the cross, but it wasn't the worst part of the cross. The worst part of the cross was the fact that Jesus was separated from his Father. Now, we don't know what that means, whether they were physically cut off from one another, even such words are too poor. We don't know what happened in the Godhead. And some would say, no, they cannot be separated. We don't really know. We could argue about it, and people do. People like to argue about these things. A lot of people like to argue about things you can't know. And I find, well, you can't know it, so why argue about it? Just think about it as far as you can, and then stop. But the point is that when Jesus said on the cross, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He was expressing the fact that on the cross, the Godhead was ripped apart in order to bring us back. The cut in Adam's side, if you remember the bride comes from Adam's side, and he was put into a deep sleep, which is in a way an anesthetic. He was anesthetized for the operation. If he had had that operation without an anesthetic, he would have suffered terrible pain. Well, I say that, but that was the paradise. I'm not sure there was pain in paradise. Maybe God could have done it without pain. But the point is that when Adam was put into a deep sleep, he is showing us the horror of the cross. God cut his son. The blood that was shed was not just physical blood, though that was terrible enough, but it was the fact that there was blood spilt in the Godhead. Now remember, when man sinned, blood was spilt. Because when man sins, God is wounded. Especially when you think of the original sin, man could only sin by actually turning his back on God. I like to think of it like that. I don't like to think of it like this, but I can understand it better like this. When we think of man beat God's face with a stick. He took a stick and hit God in the face. That's original sin. Sin is an offense to God. It's to wound God. And of course, it's not wounding an enemy. It's wounding our Father. Now, if you can imagine a rebellious teenager taking a stick to his father, that's terrible enough. But imagine a teenager taking his stick or whip to a wonderful father and hurting his father. Now you begin to understand what happened in sin, when man sinned, and why God was so grieved, why God was so broken. Because the original sin was the breaking of a precious unity and agreement. Instead of coming closer to God into the everlasting covenant, man had slapped God in the face, worse than that, and sinned against God and broken his heart. On the cross, Christ was torn apart from God in order to bring man back. And there on the cross, this wonderful, precious unity and union in the Godhead was broken. How it happens, how can God, who is one, be torn apart? But the greatest crisis and tragedy of the Godhead, if I can put it that way, was when the Son of God was made to be sin in order to bring the human race back. Now, some people have thought of this a bit like a play. They've imagined that there's the sin takes place in the garden. Now the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit withdraw into the council of their own being. And there in the council of their own being, they make a plan. And that plan is now to be brought out. The angels didn't know what it was, or they had some dim idea, but they didn't know fully what it was. This plan actually wasn't dreamt up after the problem of sin. It was agreed before the foundation of the world, before the creation of man. So God in his counsels now holds this counsel, what the Godhead will do And this is again part of the everlasting covenant. There in their